Today, Does Not Compute is sponsored by the good folks at Linode. They make it super easy to deploy and manage SSD servers. You can spin up a new server in any of their 8 data centers whenever you want in just seconds. Linode also has incredible pricing, offering double the RAM of most other VPS hosts at the same price points. They just announced a new 1 GB server plan for only $5 a month, and their high memory plans start at 16 gigabytes for just $60 a month. This is seriously some of the best pricing I've seen for virtual servers. Of course, all Linode servers are fully SSD backed and run on Intel E5 processors over a 40 gigabit network. As you'd expect, you get full control over your servers, so you can encrypt the disk, run private Git or VPN servers, Docker containers, or just about anything else you can think of. Linode also offers add-on services like backups, load balancers, and system monitoring utilities to help you easily build out your app's architecture. Head over to linode.com/doesnotcompute to learn more. When you sign up, use the promo code DOESNOTCOMPUTE2017, all one word, and they'll start you off with $20 in account credit. That's enough for 4 months of a 1 GB server. Super cool. Thanks so much to Linode for their support, and don't forget to check out linode.com/doesnotcompute and sign up. Have a good week, Sean.
Yes, I had a difficult week, but it was fine.
Difficult in, like, job-wise?
Yeah, well, difficult in, like, thinking and solving problems-wise. Difficult in actually solving some problems wise. So I'm dealing with lots of shipping stuff right now, and anything dealing with the checkout, obviously, I need to treat with absolute paranoia. You know, can anyone do anything to this to manipulate data coming to me? So basically, I'm not relying on any data that's coming to me from the API and the checkout flow. When someone actually clicks checkout, then all the totals and everything are calculated on the back end, you know, so I'm not relying on parameters and stuff. So that creates an interesting challenge in dealing with shipping. Right now, I'm integrating EasyPost to do like estimated shipping numbers and stuff. And on top of that, there are different cases, like a customer can choose pickup, which means that we wouldn't charge any shipping at all, nor would we calculate any shipping because that'd be wasted resource. But on top of that, there's also a couple of different options that people can choose. So it's a whole thing, and I'm trying to figure out how to map things up the right way so that it's just basically not a house of cards, and that way down the road when I need to change something, it's not going to collapse on me. So that was, well, I mean, that was recent. That was like Thursday and Friday. The beginning of the week, I was pretty productive, but the last 2 days was a lot of trial and error and doing and redoing.
Yeah, that sounds actually, it's a very different problem than what I spent my week on, but sort of similar in the like, just spending a lot of time figuring out how a thing should be architected. I've been in a spreadsheet like all week. I probably spent, 30, 40 hours in this spreadsheet.
That's crazy.
It's amazing how much a difference looking at a white background makes for your eyes. My eyes start burning after like a few hours of looking at this thing.
Are you using Flux during the day?
No. Do you have yours set up to go during the day?
Mm-hmm. All the time.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I might have to try that.
Especially if I'm looking at screens with light backgrounds a lot, I'll just turn it on for the duration of that workday or something. And it does make a difference for me. My eyes, my retinas feel less burned. I think more than anything, I feel less tired at the end of the day, if that makes sense.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'll definitely have to give that a go.
I know a lot of people probably cringed at hearing that. Oh, how can you do that? The colors, man. But doesn't make a difference to me. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you're not doing design work, then you're just picking colors off the screen anyhow.
Right. The hexes
doesn't matter
match
what they look like.
Yeah. So, yeah, get off my back. No, I have it running all the time on my iOS devices. Like sometimes it'll glitch out and they won't turn on, and I'll look at my phone in the morning and it's like someone shared a picture of it on Twitter. I'll have to find it for the show notes, but it was like 1,000 suns coming out of a glass screen directly into my eyeballs.
Yeah. So I've been in the spreadsheet like all week, and it's been a while since I've had to do something like that. It's been kind of interesting to flex those muscles again. Basically what we're getting set up is for Nest Notes, there's sets of literally hundreds of questions. I think there's about 400 questions in the spreadsheet right now, about how a pregnancy has gone and how the newborn is doing, and like weekly updates for various things, monthly updates, all that kind of stuff. So it's been like figuring out the recurrence patterns there and all that kind of stuff. And normally, of course, I would do this like in JSON or like in some kind of directly computer readable format, not in a spreadsheet. But because I am working with my co-founder on this, it was best for her to go in and lay things out in a spreadsheet. And now basically I'm taking that and normalizing it. I'm acting sort of as the translation layer. Like we've talked about this before. A big part of this job is translating between what people say they want and what making that into something that the computer can actually do. And so this has been a real exercise in that process.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible how much time you can burn up in that translation phase, especially something like this. Because I think I feel like you've shown me screenshots of this thing and I just couldn't deal with it at the moment. I was like, oh, I can't look at this.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's a lot.
It's quite a bit. That's pretty wild. But you said you mentioned some sort of visualizer tool or something, some way to query the sheets.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this is really cool. Google added this to the spreadsheets a while back. I don't remember exactly when, but it's I think it's just called Explore. But essentially, there's just a button at the bottom right of a spreadsheet. And if you have a nicely formatted spreadsheet where everything is consistent and can be sorted and all that, then you can actually just type in natural language queries into it, and it'll give you a bunch of information about your data. It's super cool. So, for example, I just typed in identifier where moment type category name is family snapshot, and it actually knew what that meant and looked at all the different columns in my spreadsheet and then showed me what the identifiers were where that moment category name matched. It's super cool. It's a very SQL-like thing. If you have done stuff with databases, you're going to be familiar with kind of what they're going for, but it's a lot more flexible and it auto-completes. It's really neat. It's a cool way to find like duplicates in your data or just see, for example, the spreadsheet I'm working in has things grouped into categories. So it's like, does this category have enough items? That kind of stuff. Makes it really easy to do directly in the spreadsheet, which is super cool. I'm very impressed with it.
Yeah, that does sound really useful, especially for things like you said, finding duplicates. I mean, I haven't had to work in a spreadsheet like that for a long time, but a tool like that makes it sound not quite as bad as it used to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially if you're just doing a straight up search, you know, a non-intelligent search. I think that something like this sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it can do more advanced stuff as well. I've kind of just started scratching the surface of it because, I mean, same as you, I haven't really had a good spreadsheet to try this out on before. So I'm just starting to dip my toes in the water, but first impressions, very, very cool stuff. If you spend a lot of time in Google Sheets, you should definitely take a peek at this.
Yeah, that's something I'm becoming more familiar with, especially, you know, the more I talk to Lindsay, my boss, the founder of Design Collective, the more I talk to her, I'm learning what kind of numbers she's looking for. And so I sent her a message specifically and I said, hey, I know that you need data to make good decisions for the business and let me know what kind of data you need and I can get it for you. And then, you know, I could use something like Heroku Data Clips to do that. There's also a gem that I came across recently called Blazor. I'll put that in the show notes too. But essentially, it's if you've never heard of Heroku Data Clips either, essentially you create a new clip and then you just write some SQL and it queries whatever database you specify. So for example, if you wanted to know how many active users you had, you could just write some SQL to query all the users and then it just spits out all the rows.
Yeah.
And that's a data clip.
One of the great things about data clips in particular is that they always work in a read-only fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no chance that somebody can go in, like you send it off to a non-technical coworker who just needs to examine some data to pull into, you know, make some charts or whatever. And they can't accidentally mess up your data set. They can't delete everything or anything like that. It's always read-only, which is great.
That would be terrifying.
Oh, man.
Sending that link, I would never. But there's another gem called Blazor that does something similar where, as far as I know, Heroku Data Clips, they just kind of list the data out. And then you can download it and use it however you want. But Blazor is more for the purpose of Data Clips is to get the data out into something that you can use to parse it, you know, find your insights. But Blazor is a gem that you add and it gives you a route basically for your app. And then you basically can make little clips, I guess, I don't know what else to call them. And you just write SQL and then you can have it actually generate graphs and things for you. So essentially you're making little pieces of SQL that creates a dashboard and collects data for you. They market it as like a business intelligence tool, I suppose, which I guess that's what it is, right? But yeah, so I'm having to learn more about that, especially SQL, because that's not something I've dug into a lot. I've read about it here and there, but nothing ever to like really make it stick in my memory, how to do things without having to look stuff up. So yeah.
You're talking about writing plain SQL queries?
Yeah. I mean, I've gone through SQL tutorials and learned about different joins and such. But that doesn't mean that I can just write it without having to look it up. Sure. I have to look the syntax up all the time. But that's kind of an area where I've realized I need to grow. I rely on Active Record a ton. Active Record is fine. That's great, you know. But I think that in learning, actual SQL, I think that I could actually utilize Active Record better and more performantly and all that stuff. So just one of those places.
This is really cool. I'm just clicking through some of the Blazor demos. Like they have fake dashboards and stuff up. Mm-hmm. This is really, really neat. This looks super useful.
Yeah.
I have to dig into that more.
Yeah, I'm planning on using it. I love data. I haven't had really much of a chance to do any of that sort of thing. It's really interesting to me though. So it's going to be fun to dig into it. Is whenever I can sync this shipping iceberg, you know, hopefully within the next couple of days. But yeah, no, that's something I'm looking forward to. And what's cool is that, I mean, I'm really enjoying this job is because it's forcing me to realize where my weaknesses are, and it's kind of forcing me to work on those weaknesses.
Yeah, that's definitely been a thing for me as well. It's like definitely flexing muscles that I have not had to flex in a while or ever in some cases.
It makes the day go by super fast, I've realized.
Yeah.
The days can just blend. I guess it doesn't help that I'm working from home and I never leave this house, barely ever leave this house. But no, it's been a lot of fun.
So there was some stuff on Twitter. There was some stuff on Twitter, Sean, that you were talking to me about.
Oh, yeah. I get all fired up sometimes about Twitter, get real hot. So basically I'm always getting hot about stuff on Twitter, but I'm really good at keeping my mouth shut and not tweeting about it. Instead, I send stuff to you and then we talk about it. But yeah, I just saw a tweet recently and I thought it was interesting and I started talking to you about it. And so basically, this guy, PPK, goes by on Twitter, Peter Paul Koch, I think is how you say his last name. He was giving a talk and someone had taken a picture of his talk, and on one of the slides behind him, it says, if you can't do without tools, you're not a web developer. Now, granted, I wasn't at the talk and I didn't listen to the talk. I was just looking at what people were saying. I was trying to observe the conversation around it. So that's one thing that I do a lot is I observe the conversation, but I don't jump into the conversation about it. And it seems like there were lots of people on both sides of the argument. Lots of people saying, yeah, that's true. You know, people rely on tools way too much. People, instead of learning how to actually program, just rely on using packages written by other developers and stuff. And then there are other people saying, well, that, you know, that's kind of not really true or not really fair. And one of the most retweeted, starred, whatever, tweets, this guy said, if you can't perform brain surgery with nothing but a scalpel, you're not a real brain surgeon, essentially is what he's, you know, paralyzing there. And I don't know, I just thought it was really interesting. I kind of like, my first reaction was like, oh, that's not true. And I got kind of mad, but yeah. What do you think about that, Paul?
I mean, I have feelings. I have feelings, Sean. I have thoughts and feelings. First of all, PPK is somebody who was hugely influential for me when I was getting started, especially when I was getting more serious. And around the time that I got my first like full-time dev job, he, especially in the early days of mobile, had some really incredible compatibility tables because things were a mess, Sean. Things were a horrible mess. Right around the time that that iOS and Android were both really taking off to the point where it was a thing that everybody had one instead of just a bunch of nerds. His compatibility tables, for anybody who was doing dev at that point, mobile dev, they were for sure a lifesaver. Like really, really great stuff. And so to see him going around saying stuff like this is kind of bums me out a little bit. I'm going to be honest. I feel like that's such a blanket statement to make about web development. I know, for example, that I was definitely more on the side of avoid tools than you can for quite a long time. And I still try to not just add tools for their own sake, you know, but I do think there is a balance. There is a certain point where things get complex. The web apps that people are building now, I mean, Nest Notes even, what I'm building now for sure would just not be doable if I were just writing it with, say, jQuery or plain JS. I would not be able to have the level of productivity in building these things out. Could I do it? Well, yeah, absolutely. But just because you can do something doesn't mean that it's the right way to solve that problem. I could do it, but it would be much slower and it would be very painful and difficult to do. And so I think these tools, it's important to look at what the tool is actually saving you from having to do. Because if it is something like left padding a string, for example, just to pull a random example out of nowhere, then, you know, maybe that's not really worth pulling in a separate package for. Maybe that's just something that you should drop in your own kind of like utilities folder of your app. And then it's just done and there. But something, I mean, if you're talking about tools like, for example, Webpack or something like even a JS framework like Vue or React, I think that the value those provide is, generally speaking at least, much, much more valuable than the extra amount of time that it takes to learn and maintain your use of that framework or that tool.
Right. And I mean, why wouldn't you use that tool? Because just by using that tool, you save countless number of hours that you can apply to building your product to make it actually usable, you know? So that way you have a better product for the users, because that's why we're doing this in the first place. We're building products for people to use. And in using those tools, you get a better end product because it saves you time.
There's a summary of what he was saying here. And it's basically web developers have historically been treated as not real programmers, which led to over-engineered tools to prove how smart they are. And I'm just not sure what that even means. Like, how is that the case at all? I guess would be my question.
Right.
Because you look at something like Webpack, and man, it is super complex. Like, there is a lot going on there, and it is kind of tough to pick up at first. I'm not going to deny that. I'll be the first to admit that. But what it's doing is also super complex. Like, there is a ton of functionality, and it is enabling things that just have not really been feasible before. It really is expanding the boundaries of what's possible in front-end development. And I think, yes, if you were building something that had the same kind of front-end functionality as like a Rails site in, say, 2008, and you used Webpack for it and used all these modern tools, that would probably be for sure overkill. But if you're building a modern web application that's talking to an API, I don't see how that's overkill at all. I don't see how that's any form of over-engineering, personally.
I don't think it is. And I think there's a large contingent of people that don't want to build SPAs. They don't want to like take on the new, I don't know what else to say, like how else to say it, but like the new way of building apps, right? It's almost like the standard now. Like most, I mean, pretty much like when a new app comes out, it's going to be a SPA. It's going to be communicating with an API. It's going to be a headless app, basically. And like, I think that like people kind of looking at tools like Webpack or a lot, I mean, like most specifically any JavaScript related tool, quote unquote, modern related tool, most people are going to think to themselves, like, why would you ever want any of this stuff at all? This is crazy. The amount of configuration that goes into this is nuts. Like, look at Vue CLI. If you crack open that package, it's crazy. You know, it would take at least a day to figure out how everything works, you know? So I think, like I said, there's a contingent of people that are looking at things that are coming out, modern JS, through that lens of, is this really even necessary? And then I could totally see how you might surmise something like that. Like, oh, this guy just built Webpack to show off because it's super complicated. But like you're saying, I don't think that's the case at all.
And realistically, the code that I'm writing now in Webpack projects is just so much drastically better than anything I've written before. It's so much more modular, so much cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And just having that kind of flexibility there in my build pipeline is kind of invaluable. And in the long run, on a large project that I'm going to be working on, hopefully for years, that's really important. And that additional bit of startup cost in having to set these things up and having to understand these tools and having to keep up to date with them is just so far outweighed by all the benefits that I get.
Yeah. I mean, think about, okay, so you have Webpack in your project minus Vuex, because that's a whole nother topic, stores and all that. But minus that, like, how simple is your code actually? It's pretty simple. I mean, you have a component and you have a route definition file for your router, and then you have page components that just make other little components. It's simple.
Right. And in a lot of ways, it's very similar to the code that I would write in Rails, where I have a route definition, and then I have a thing that says, hey, here's what needs to happen when you hit that route, and then I have a template that displays. Like, it really is the same kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just that we've shifted a lot of where the logic lives.
Yeah,
and I think, personally, for the better for most apps.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, I mean, to kind of, like, case in point this, so I've been working in Watch Nature, and I'm building it, you know, there's going to be an app, and there's going to be an API. And so I'm trying out a couple of different things to see what would be the best way to, like, what would be the best technology for this API, considering like real-time factors, considering just different things like that. And so I built out an initial API in Rails, and I started working on the client. And then I was like, I'm going to give Phoenix another try, just because there's going to be lots of streaming data and lots of real-time data. So I built up a Phoenix API, and the client doesn't care. As long as the API responds and accepts the same endpoints, it doesn't care at all.
Right. Yeah, that kind of flexibility is really, really cool. Just the lack of coupling there makes such a big difference as your API grows and evolves. And even in your case, like switching over to an entirely different language, not a problem.
Not a problem at all. I mean, the database structures are nearly identical. Like if I decided to switch one for the other, nobody would even know. There wouldn't have to be any sort of big migration, nothing. It would just work.
I think really though, kind of the biggest issue I see with this whole thing with saying, if you can't do without tools, you're not a web developer. That's literally what it says on the slide I'm looking at right now. I would be very hesitant to ever say that someone is or isn't a real developer because of anything, like least of all because of the tools that they use. I mean, somebody that's just getting started and is doing like WordPress theme edits, they're still a real developer. It's just that they're choosing a different set of tools that work for what they need to do right now. And that kind of criticism, I'm not sure how helpful it really is. And I think in many ways it's harmful, because you get this thing where people don't want to go on and learn more advanced stuff. They don't want to get more into the community because they see that the community is filled with a bunch of jerks who are saying you're not a real developer. And I think that's the kind of toxic stuff that we really need to not have.
Well, it also goes back to the whole PHP discussion we've had before too. How people are always ragging on PHP for being a terrible programming language, which isn't necessarily true. There's plenty Facebook, Slack, you know? Like, what more do you need to say about it? It's a successful language. So to me, it feels relatively similar. Like, people are being picked on for their choices. And like you said, that's not good for the community. It's not good for people learning. It's not good for sharing of ideas. It's not good for any of it.
I mean, I guess the other way you could put this is, what if I said, if you can't keep up with the latest tools, you're not a real web developer?
Yeah.
Like, I think equally valid way to look at it, and still something that probably should not be said.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one, like, the thing that makes me like not respond and retaliate to this stuff online is I just think about why I'm doing it in the first place. And I'm not building apps in the first place to make me feel like I'm a good programmer, or I'm sophisticated and I can figure out something that's really difficult. I'm doing it because I want to build something for people to use and that I think will hopefully help people better themselves and their lives. So at the end of the day, take anything you see like that as a grain of salt. Like if you see someone say something to you and it makes you feel bad, take it as a grain of salt, especially if it's coming from the technology world where people are trying to say things like, if you're just relying on tools, you're not a real developer, just shrug it off.
Yeah. Bunch of jerks in programming, Sean. Don't at me.
Don't at me.
Thanks again to Linode for sponsoring Does Not Compute. Linode provides SSD-backed virtual machines that are super easy to set up and incredibly well-priced. Their 1 gigabyte servers cost only $5 per month, and their server tiers across the board offer double the RAM of most other VPS hosts at the same price point. Make sure you take a look at linode.com/doesnotcompute to learn more. Sign up using the promo code DoesNotCompute2017, all one word, and you'll get $20 in account credit to start setting up your servers.